Loving God, we've never done this before. We've never preached together. We've never heard these words. We've never been in this moment together. And so God be with us. May our words, may our thoughts, may our hopes be acceptable in your eyes. And may we never lightly presume to preach your word. May we never lightly presume to hear your word. For in your word is abundant life. Amen.
Amen.
So this morning, we celebrate the Transfiguration, hence the white. And it's one of those stories, something for everyone, right? It's a fun story to tell the kids as the disciples, they stare on like hapless stooges while Peter runs around wanting to build forts for Moses and Elijah and Jesus so they can stay on the mountain and play together forever. It's so Peter. And those who might be looking for sponsors, I mean, you know, Mountain Co-op and Tide could be drawn to the mountain hike and Jesus' dazzling white clothes. I mean, think of the fundraising possibilities. It's perfect. And for those who like a good conspiracy story, how would Peter and the others recognize Moses and Elijah? I mean, did they have faith ball cards in those days? You could sort of look through and go, oh yeah, that old guy there, that must be Moses. How would they know? How do they know that Jesus isn't just talking to a couple of old guys on the mountain? And seriously, how do they know that the voice they hear belongs to God? I mean, they did say that they were pretty sleepy. And yet this story is told in Luke and in Matthew and in Mark's Gospels. It's hinted at in John's Gospel. Peter brings it up in two of his letters. It's a pretty big deal. Pretty big deal to the Gospel writers. Pretty big deal to the early community. It declares God's presence in our world. It connects Jesus to the Jewish tradition as he's seen in conversation with Moses, who embodies the law, and Elijah, who is the voice of prophecy. I mean, it clearly resonated in the first century. And in centuries to follow, if you can trust art, and there's a lot of art of the Transfiguration. But in 2019, I have to wonder if the story has any currency. I mean, it's pretty far-fetched, right? I mean, there are so many voices out there that I don't think any of us are willing to commit to a single voice being absolutely the voice of God. I mean, after all, we're a big tent, and there's just too many lenses. You can't just sort of say, oh, that one. And eventually, I think most of us recognize that dazzling white clothes get dirty. And we all have to come down from the mountain. And in this fast-paced world where I've got 14 seconds to decide if I want to watch the next episode on Netflix, I don't know that we expect or even want moments to last forever.
I agree, except for the times that I have wanted to last forever. That airport hug before a loved one's departure. The setting sun on the perfect day. The times when the puzzle pieces of life just seem to fit together. I remember this time a few years ago at a farmer's market. Just a regular Saturday morning in Toronto. It was one of those bluebird sunshine kind of days, and I got to the market early. I walked around a bit and chatted with a potato guy. Now, I grew up on a potato farm, and I don't get a lot of opportunity for tuber talk these days. So I talked to the potato guy, and I bought a coffee from a vendor who always seemed to be smiling, and I found a bench to sit on. A busker started playing a song I didn't know. A girl with a purple dress danced with her hands over her head. The smells of coffee mixed with fresh baking and soil still caked on the farmer's produce. Mm. And the sun shone everywhere, bouncing off the signs and faces and jam jars. And it was beautiful and alive. It was real, and for a reason I still can't explain, I was overwhelmed by the moment. I started crying. Everything was so full of life. I was so full of life. In that moment, I could see it. I could feel it. It was real, and I wanted to stay.
I think a lot of us just had a moment like that. There was that moment when Heather and Marie were singing and their voices were coming together and the choir started to come in. You couldn't really hear them yet, you could just feel them. And we could have stayed in that moment. I get that. And you remind me, I was called to the hospital late at night, and his life was ending. And there had been weeks of preparation disguised as hope. I mean, we were sure he was going to rally when we spoke, but in our hearts, I think we all knew that he was going to die. So there I was at 1 a.m. holding hands and praying and waiting and witnessing and wondering what I was doing there. They didn't need me. There was nothing to say that hadn't been said. It wasn't that I didn't want to be there. It's just that I felt I might be intruding. Like, and maybe a better minister would know what to say or to do that would make the whole thing better. Nurses appeared and seemed like angels. They were so quiet and kind. And he died. It was almost a thing that you could feel. It was quiet and it was holy. In love, we had let him go. And then she and I sat down, and she leaned into me, and I gently held her as she cried, and we said the 23rd Psalm together, over and over again. Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And this empty room was full. Our hearts were full. I had no idea what I was doing, but it was good to be there. Not happy, but holy. And the moment seemed to stretch into forever. And I couldn't have left even if I wanted to. And eventually the world moved on and we did leave. But I honestly don't recall if it was 30 minutes or 30 hours later that we left the hospital. I just know that the world was different that night. We didn't stay in the moment, although it felt like we might, even a little bit like we wanted to, sort of stay in grief-stricken, holy moment. But it didn't last.
The world keeps moving. We keep moving. I only sat on that bench at the farmer's market a few minutes. The mechanistic mind can be deferred for only so long, it seems. I had stuff to do, after all, places to be. And as you do these days, I took a picture with my phone and moved on. So I identify with Peter in this gospel story. I understand his impulse to want to build the three dwellings for Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. He knows he can't stay there forever. He has to go back to the valley, but he wants to hold on to the mountaintop experience. Yeah. He wants to capture the moment, to trap that light so that he can find his way back and relive that moment. That moment when everything seemed so alive.
Yeah.
But now I look at that photo that I took of the farmer's market, and the scene seems so entirely ordinary. Nothing special. Just people and vegetables frozen in the frame of a regular day. The light looks just as you would expect.
Yeah.
Jesus transfigured is nowhere to be seen.
In that late night in the hospital, it would probably have looked on camera like any hospital room or any visit. But it wasn't for me. The nurses did appear to be angels. And there was no rush, and there was such deep compassion and care in their voices and their simple ministrations. And there was this openness between my friend and I. I didn't see Jesus as much as I felt the holy presence of God. You know, I felt the law, like God's foundation. It was framed somehow by God. And I felt the prophecy, God's ongoing voice. God was speaking to us and through us. Somehow we were in that moment the incarnation, the very presence of God to each other. We were Jesus. And so Moses, Elijah, and Jesus were there. But we weren't dazzling white. Right? I mean, we were all sorts of warm umber and soft embrace and tears. So I'm not really sure what all the dazzling white stuff is about. It honestly, it just feels a little contrived to me, a little too much like a superhero movie.
I get it. But the more I think about it and the more we talk, it seems like that's the part that really rings true for me. The moment when the veil is lifted, Jesus is aglow. The farmer's market is alive in light. The room is holy. The veil is lifted. The experience of a different kind of reality. This all reminds me of something Thomas Merton wrote in one of his books about an experience he had on the corner of 4th and Walnut in Louisville, Kentucky. He writes this. There at the corner of 4th and Walnut in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another even though we were total strangers. And if only everybody could realize this, it cannot be explained. There's no way of telling people that they are all walking around shining like the sun. It was like waking from a dream of separateness. I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts, the person that each one is in the eyes of God. If only they could see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way, there would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed. I suppose the big problem would be that we would fall down and worship each other. Waking from a dream of separateness, the veil is lifted and we see each other as God sees us, walking around shining like the sun. Okay. This sounds like a world transfigured to me, a world I want to live in.
Yeah, I could work with that. See, I really like this idea of lifting the veil. That bit from Paul's letter to the Corinthians that Julie read about removing the veil, it always bugged me. It always sounds like Paul is saying that the faith of his parents simply isn't good enough. It's veiled. I mean, and I totally understand that we always think that our parents are never as smart as we are. But maybe, actually, he's not dissing his parents as much as he's saying that this is what he's experiencing in Jesus. This idea that the veil is lifted, revealing that not only is Jesus holy, but that all of the world, all of our experiences are holy. We just lack the will or the eyes to see it. Faith transfigures the world when we look with the expectation of seeing God's presence.
The glimpses of the mountaintop gives us hope. They show us something important, something real, but even more, these moments show us how to live in the valley as if we're still on the mountain. These moments cannot be captured on digital devices or closed up in dwelling places or locked away in places of worship. They are experiences that open up a new way of seeing, a new way of seeing the beauty and interconnectedness of things, a new way of experiencing our own lives.
Yeah, it's like the glimpses of this different reality may be fleeting. But what if we acted as if we saw this way all the time? Even in those moments when we don't quite yet, what if we acted that way? I mean, how would it be if we could hear Jesus beckoning us to stay awake? What if we functioned as if this transfigured world is real and that it's the veil of busyness that's fake? The veil of consumerism that's fake, the veil of corruption, of greed, of cynicism, of warmongering. What if that's what's fake? How would it be if we could see each other, see ourselves as God sees us? This is my child, my chosen, my beloved.
We do have to come down from the mountain.
Wow.
We do have to leave the grace-filled hospital room and the shining moment when the girl in the purple dress dances with her hands above her head. We may need to leave, but we do not need to be unmoved. The experience of God breaking into our lives leaves us changed, different, transfigured. Being awake to God at work in the world gives us a glimpse into the heart of God, where we are all valued, all loved, all called, and all aglow with the life of the Spirit. You are my child, my chosen, my beloved. Now go shine. Amen.